Let's do it. All right, we've been going through a series of questions, and as we're playing the game of what to do, act or react, how. But before we go into that, I always like to give a summary on the prime verse we've always been focusing on, and that has to do with 1 John 4:18 that talks about there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. Because fear has to do with punishment, and the one who fears is not made perfect in love. We discussed about this fear. What does it mean to have fear? And what is this fear? And this fear is a tool. It's a gift, matter of fact. It's a tool that was gifted to human beings as a tool to help us understand our minds. It was like an alarm system. Fear is an alarm system. It's not negative. Nothing God has ever created is bad. Matter of fact, all things are good. And fear is one of those things where fear is telling you that at that very point of moment, there is a thought that originated from the outside that is bottling or affecting your mind. And so fear is telling you, yo, watch out, because you are no longer in a state of love. You are no longer in a state of rest. You are no longer in a state of peace. You are now in fear because there's an external thought affecting your mind. So it's a way of you understanding that your mind is under attack. And it's not for condemnation, it's not for judgment, but it's for us to realize that we are under attack. And when you realize you're under attack, then you need to go and clean up. See, a lot of people try to fight the fear, but you don't need to fight the fear. You need to fight the source of the fear, the force behind the fear. That's the problem. The fear itself is just letting you know that at that very moment, you are under attack. But there is other components that are affecting that very fear. And so what happens is, fear is a result of an external thought that is affecting your mind. And I always say, if you want to truly understand that, you have to understand things like insecurity, which insecurity means that you believe you don't have the power within to affect or impact or change your external world. And this makes you a subject of the playground of life. This gets you in a state where you're no longer living, you're not just existing, you're no longer acting, and you're no longer you're just reacting. And so people's whole life, and that's the sad bit about it, is because most of us, our whole entire life, we've actually never lived our own lives. Our life is a compilation of reactions. It is a compilation of things that we think are actions, but God doesn't consider it action, and they are not actions. Why? Because it is things that you do because of an experience. Things that you do because somebody looked at you a certain way. Things that you do because somebody thought of you a certain way. Things that you do because you don't think you belong in a certain place, because you don't think you have the ability to overcome a certain thing. So we are now living a compilation of reaction. And so our whole entire life, we've gone through it just reacting and reacting and reacting to different components. And that's the sad bit about it, is that you get to the end of your life, and if you look around and you ask yourself, how much of this life have I actually lived? That's a very depressing question to ask, because the answer will be very depressing for most of us. We haven't lived very much of our own lives. We've reacted to what happened in our childhood, what happened with our friends, what happened with the family. We've just reacted to that. What happened in job application? What happened when somebody don't like you? What happened to the society you couldn't fit in? And these compilations of reaction has assembled what somebody now calls my life. And so many people in front of you, they will tell you they're proud of their life, but when they are away by themselves, they know they haven't lived the life they should have lived. Why? Because your consciousness does not lie. It will tell you that your life isn't where it's supposed to be. And so the solution we found was the solution was love. And not any kind of love, it was perfect love. And we discussed about this state of perfect love. Cody, do you remember what we said about perfect love?
The perfect love, like he used the word complete, which is mature in God.
A love that is mature, love that is perfect. And this is a love that has to go through trials to mature up. It has to grow. A lot of people don't want love to grow. They want love to be perfect from the start. But perfect love is a result of opposition. It is a result of trials. It is a result of overcoming those trials. Trials alone does not give you perfect love. But overcoming those trials, overcoming those mental breaks, overcoming loss of jobs, overcoming hatred, overcoming all these things that come up in your life is what gets you to the state of perfect love. And it's not just you overcome and then you just sit there and say, I've done it. No, you must be able to overcome and still remain in that state of love. What does that mean? You know, a certain manager did wrong to you. They blamed you for something that wasn't yours. And you didn't do. You battled through that situation. Even though you lost your job, you've overcome that situation. You've overcome that mindset. You don't blame yourself. You don't blame your manager. You don't blame anybody. You just love. How many of us can do that? That takes great self-control. And so without delay, we're going to jump straight into a game of what to do. Act or react? How? And so this is a game where I ask a series of questions, and in this series of questions, we're going to try and go through and answer and say, how should we act in this situation? How should we handle this situation? And before I go through that, I want to just put it out there. If anybody has any questions about perfect love, I can explain more details about another layer of the perfect love. Or has anybody has anything to add about perfect love?
Perfect love is walking like how Jesus walked.
How is that? How is Jesus? How did he walk?
He responded with compassion and understanding what their true value was of everybody.
So what does that look like in a scenario? Would you say...
So like, you know, someone was being rude. Someone was being rude to me, I'd be like, whoa, you're so much more than that.
Oh, wow. So you're saying your manager is in full anger, blaming you for something you didn't do. And you respond to them. And they, at that moment, because they're putting pressure on you, right? They want you to cry. They want you to get angry. They want you to yell back. And you're telling me perfect love is maintaining that composure and then responding with whatever line you just said. Then is that the understanding?
So it's like, probably with it's like a bridge to like talk about what they're made for and that they're more than what's happened to them in their life.
Okay.
That made them to be that certain way to respond like that.
Yeah. And so if someone is coming and attacking you, how do you think you will handle that situation?
Love them.
How? In that moment? Because we got to understand, the people listening right now are thinking, I want to love them, but I don't know how to.
You know, not so much to tell them, don't do this, but just ask them, why are you feeling like this? And have them self-reflect and just, you know, and then look for that window or opportunity where you just see a good soil and you can plant that seed into them. Yeah.
You know, this topic is actually very beautiful because it goes into our first question of what to do, act or react, how. Because the first question says, I was blamed for something I did not do. How do you manage that situation? You're in the workplace and you're constantly getting blamed for something you did not do. You know clearly well it's not you, but everybody else thinks it's you. How do you act in that situation? How do you stay away from reacting in that situation?
Just to ask what the solution is to that issue that they're having, and whatever it is, just do it. Just look past the blaming and just get to the core of it. Yeah, so just to stop people from reacting and stuff, and yeah, displaying love and responsibility, and displaying that,
yeah,
you know you lay your life for your brothers, you lay your life down for your brothers,
yeah,
and you know take up your cross and deny yourself and just follow what Jesus did, because he got blamed for everything, yeah, to the point he died for, yeah, us. Yeah,
what do you think, Suzel? I already say your name on camera, on mic. What do you want? Your name is on the mic, man. Now, what do you think, Jesse? How do you think the way to handle that situation, getting blamed for something you didn't do? How do you go from there? What to do in that situation? How do you manage that situation with self-control?
I feel like going about it the way you're going about it is probably, you know, working out. I guess it'll unfold, you know, as time passes, I guess. You know, if you're not the one that's being, you know, you're not the one that's being blamed, you know, the person that actually did it, then I feel like it will reveal itself over time.
Yeah, yeah. And it does. In most cases, it does reveal itself. But there's been a lot of people that have ended up in jail for things they've never done. And we can imagine the amount of bitterness, the amount of anger, frustration a lot of these guys would have, because they know that it's not them that caused the error. It's not them that caused the mistake. But they were blamed and jailed for something that was never their fault. So how does one manage their mind in that situation? Because you have every right. You have every right to be angry. You have every right. And you can be angry, and nobody will tell you have no rights in there. But is that really the right thing to do?
What do you think is the right way to go about it?
Well, the first thing is first. We haven't heard Cody speak yet, so we gotta get Cody on the mic.
I think a lot of people tend to focus on the problems rather than the solutions.
Yeah.
And instead of looking at, you know, what, the negative out of this. Who did this? Who did that? Just, yeah, say we're here now. How can we
move forward
from this?
But someone that got sent to jail because of that very reason, how can they move forward? Because they feel like their life has been locked up now because of something that they don't deserve it. And matter of fact, that line I've heard it so many times, counseling a lot of people. They say, I don't deserve this. I'm better than this. I don't deserve this life. I don't deserve this partner. I don't deserve to be treated like this. I don't deserve to be treated like this, and so forth. And everybody feels like they're being treated less than what they deserve.
Yeah, I heard this statement where it was,
nothing just happens, everything happens just. So, like, as a man thinketh, so he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before going to jail or prison, like, yeah, I would have to tell the truth anyway on the stand. So, like,
yeah,
like, I can't lie there. Like, I just, like, I took it upon myself, and we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, but at that point, you can imagine the person and people in that situation, and we've all been in that situation where we feel like we were treated less than what we deserved. We spent 10, 15 hours after work and did overtime and work harder than we did, and we didn't get appreciated for the work we did. We didn't get appreciated for the effort we put in, and when things arised, fingers got pointed straight at us. So you feel like you are giving more than you're receiving, because that's the feeling you're feeling there.
Yeah, but you don't expect anything back when you give. If you're doing that, then that's on you. If you're doing things to expect something back, that's on you. You've caused that upon yourself. When I do things at work, I don't expect to be rewarded or anything. I do it because I care about the people I work for.
So what would you say to somebody that's in that situation now, that is getting blamed for something he didn't do?
If you didn't do it, then state your case and say, look, this is what happened. Don't get angry, just say there must be a miscommunication or something. If they don't agree with you, just take it on the chin.
Take it on the chin? How does that look like, taking on the chin?
You don't, like Cody was saying, you don't worry about who did this, you just find a solution. Because if you sit there for half an hour going, but Bob was in the kitchen and he did it, that's a waste of time. Just move on.
It seems to be quite simple, and I would agree that a lot of people probably think the way we do too. Just stop bickering about it and move on. But from the stories that I've heard and things that I see in daily lives, we just don't move on. That thought stays with you the whole day, the whole week, whole month. You hold grudges against different teammates, different people you hang out with, and some people cut themselves and separate themselves from the people they talk to, and matter of fact, a relationship gets broken because of that. He's the person that pointed the finger at me, so now I can't see him the same way I saw him before. How many people go to their accusers and call their accusers their best friends? Not many. So there seems to be an easy understanding of what to do prior to the situation, but when really in the situation, we've all failed to come out strong. We've all felt that it was another person's fault other than us. We've all felt that we didn't deserve to be where we were. Matter of fact, I don't hear many people say, I deserve to be pointed finger at. Matter of fact, I've never heard that before. And that's an interesting concept, because it's almost what Jesus did. He put himself there, though he didn't deserve to be there. Usually we try to take ourselves out of there because we think we don't deserve to be there. Why am I in the hot seat? Why am I the one that is pointed fingered at? And usually everybody involved in that situation, you seem to hold a certain grudge towards them. And it takes a fair bit of mental management to hold those people in high regards after the incident. And in my lifetime, with all the counseling and all the people I've spent time with, I have yet to see a large majority of people let loose. And when I mean let loose, I'm talking about the mind. Let things flow. Usually we always hold some form of repercussion. we always hold some form of future punishment we're going to give to that person. I might punish them in the way I look at them. I might punish them in the way I've talked to them. I might punish them in the way I do something.
It causes you grief at the end of the day. When you will have revenge for people, it actually hurts you more than it hurts the other person. You're destroying yourself. And until you realize that, you need to detach yourself. You know, like, it's not saying you don't love people. That's not what I'm saying. It's just, why have I given someone the power to affect my emotions?
Yeah.
I've made them God over my life.
Yeah. So if that's the state we want to get into, how do we get there?
Isolation. No, like...
Yeah.
No, isolation, and then you need those circumstances to come. You need people to yell at you at work. You need that because it's like a test at school. How do you know if you know this stuff if you haven't put it to the test? I could say I know x squared plus y squared. But when it comes to the test and I fail, obviously I don't know it.
So you got a point.
You have to go through those trials.
So you're saying somebody yelling at you should be expected?
Should be expected. If you want to grow, yes, it should be expected.
Being treated less than what you deserve should be expected.
Should be expected if you want to grow.
And so when that is expected and that does come to place and you're in that very position... I know you gave one suggestion, and one of your suggestions was isolation. If you're in the workplace, how do you isolate? Because you're working as a team.
You can go to the bathroom. No one needs to know what you're doing in the bathroom. You go there, take a 2-minute breather. You come back out, sort yourself out, deal with the situation.
And what is dealing with the situation? I'm just trying to...
I've come back from the bathroom, I need to sit down with my teammates and go, okay, what's the problem? How do we move on? What needs to be done to move on? And we find a solution and we work on that solution.
Yeah.
If they want you to take responsibility, then take responsibility.
But you didn't do it.
Are we in year 6? I didn't do a lot of things in the house and I get fingers pointed at me, but... I don't know, like, I don't know what it is with me. You move on, you just... If they yell at you for something... Alright, I'll do the dishes and simple. Why make it a bigger situation than it needs to be?
Okay. So, if that's the case, we say, okay, we move on. Now, that's the physical side sorted. Now, what about the mental side? Because now, at that point of time, it's when the gates of bomb starts coming in. You get, that's the time where you get bombarded. Look at what that person is saying to you. Look at the manager. Look at this certain person. And bombs, they come with fire. They come with seeds, and it's planted all over the time. And sometimes I saw myself getting bombarded, and I have to sit there and say, whoa. I gotta stop plucking out these seeds one after the other.
Well, I think I learned this over the weekend. There was a situation that occurred. And actually my family started to then use my past against me, and they're like, oh, you had 3 suicide attempts. But when you realize who you are, you need to know who you are. Because if you don't know who you are, people will define who you are. So when I was being bombarded with these arrows, they don't understand love. I felt sorry for them. Because when you understand who you are, I don't need to throw arrows at Jesse or Cody. You don't need to do stuff like that. So in fact, you actually feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
You know, because I think it's identity. If you don't know who you are, and you don't understand love. See, they're not my source of love. So what they say won't define me. My source tells me who I am.
Yeah.
So if my source doesn't tell me my past, my source tells me that my sins are forgiven and forgotten.
Yeah.
So when this is my Lord.
Yeah.
They're not my Lord. And when I let them throw arrows at me, I make them lord over my life. So it's about understanding the source and your identity. So if you define yourself in those arrows, if you're defined between your workmates and that's where your identity is, you've given them power over your life.
Good point.
Yeah, even like, you know, you knowing your identity within, like, who you are, you also see them for who they are. And, you know, what they're doing isn't who they are.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, just a state. Like, you see them for who they really are.
So what we're saying here is people's action does not define who they are.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry? How do you manage your mind? Because that's the most important thing. See, when in that workplace situation, you've gone in, take, like Cecil said, isolated yourself, took a breather, came in the situation and said, okay, what do we do to move forward? I said, take responsibility. You've taken responsibility and things are fixed on the physical. But now the real battle starts in your mind. Because at that point, you have every right to hate anybody that pointed a finger at you. And arrows are being thrown. And these arrows, you can't stop them from being thrown, but you must change the meaning of what they mean to you.
But why have you given, if, like, I don't understand why you've given those people that much power to actually affect you. That's what I'm trying to understand. Like, I don't attach myself to people at work. That's just work.
Yeah. The thing is this. Because life calls out to growth, and growth calls out to life, you will always be attacked in the last place you fail. Now, failure is something we cannot escape. So your attacks must affect you to grow. You must be affected to grow. If you're not affected by the attacks, you will not grow. And so those attacks, were designed not by the person that sent it out, because the person that sent it out isn't really who sent it out. Your attacks must affect you for you to reach a higher level of growth. Because your attacks is a representation of opposition. They must oppose what you currently believe in, what you currently stand for, what you currently, the level of power you currently have. The attacks are coming in not from the person who actually sent it, but from a higher source, from a higher power. Because we wrestle not against flesh and blood, we're against higher principalities. So those attacks are not coming in to play lullaby with you. No, they're coming in to hit you so that you may be placed in a position where you have to choose what would you do. It's the same thing in the Garden of Eden. You'll be placed in a position where you have to choose. And decision making is where 9 out of 10 of us fail.
But it's about seeing those attacks like that. Because a lot of people start to see the attacks like, my boss doesn't like me. Then you go home going, I'm going to lose my job. You got to change this. You've got to change the way you see those attacks in. Because if you see it like as a way of growth, it changes the whole meaning. You're able to move forward because you know this is to better me. Yeah. A lot of people would go home and be like, oh, people don't like me at work, which causes people to not go to work and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's about changing the meaning of the attacks. Yeah.
In my mind, that's not attacks to me. That's their defense. They're defending their nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the word is your sword, you know.
Yeah.
So you just hit him with love, and you can't, love's like, you, I don't know, it's beautiful. You can't fight it. You can't fight love.
So are you attacking people with a sword of love? You're attacking people that are defending themselves with a sword. So I get what you're saying, and it 100% is truth. But the reason I use the word attack is because that's what the scripture refers to it. And matter of fact, that's the reason why we have a sword. That's the reason why we have armor. Is because these attacks, yes, there are attacks, but the value and the meaning of it can be changed, and that's when your decision comes in. And you talked about the sword of love and being the most powerful sword you can have, and it's a battle. For us to not think of it as a battle is already doing us disfavor, because we need to realize not only are we battling with our own minds so that we may be victorious, we are also battling to win the souls of those who are aiming at us.
Yeah, definitely. And with the mind management, just to, you know, understand the lies and the truth, like if it's not aligned with God or if it's not aligned with who you are, then you know it's a lie, you know it's an attack.
Yeah.
So that's pretty black and white. Yeah. You know, it's not complicated to understand what.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, it's from fear or love.
Yeah, I would also just thank God. Thank God for another opportunity to love someone. Just always be rejoicing.
Yeah.
And rejoice always in every situation. Just rejoice.
And
that rejoicing just overflows the negative.
When you let your light shine before men, you know, they'll feel it. You know, light spreads into darkness. So you just have to keep that light, and you have to shine it. Yeah.
I love the fact that you use that terminology, shine your light.
Yeah.
In this very situation where you were getting blamed, you've gone in, you've managed your own mind, and you've come back in the midst of people. How do you shine back light to the people that blamed you? Because at that moment, their consciousness know there should be a spark, there should be there should be heat between the heads. It should be, everybody knows that we've blamed this person and it wasn't them. You also know they blamed you and it wasn't you. And usually what I've observed is at that moment there's usually some awkward silence, and nobody wants to approach to anybody, nobody wants to say anything in that moment, because what to say is the next question I'll ask. What do you say? Yeah, what do you say?
I'll just be like, hey guys, look, there's a higher purpose than this. Like, well, you know, we can't let this stuff matter. What is it? Then what matters most? Then what matters most, which is God. And we just can't. What to say to them?
Yeah, in the workplace, what would you say? Would you say God matters more? Because you're building more haters now. Then they're like, oh, then she's bringing in this God stuff again.
No, let's not be problem based. Let's be solution based. Let's, you know, we're not going to get anywhere if this is where our focus is. So let's work this out as a team.
Yeah.
You know, we can do this together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say, Sizzle?
Jess is my boss and he's just yelled at me.
Yeah.
So I've just come from the bathroom. He's told me that I accidentally put the wrong invoices in or something. I'll just apologize. I'll say sorry for the misunderstanding. What can I do to solve the problem?
Yeah. Suppose I'm talking about the next stage afterwards, that because they've gone in, you've solved the problem is solved now. Now, this is where it's usually silent, because no one knows what's the next step to take.
Well, you make it awkward. If you make it awkward, it's going to be awkward. If you go back to normal and just get along, it's what you make it.
And that's the thing. The thing is, for those people that usually struggle in this situation, because when they come back in that scene, it's awkward now because they don't know where to start because of all the brawl and all the argument that took place and all the blaming that took place. Everybody's ego has risen to a higher level. People are looking at each other differently now. Everybody's silent. And then you walk into a room and Bernadette mentioned about shining your light. So I wondered, I said, how are we going to shine the light in that situation where the whole room is dead? What do you say? What do you say? Somebody is in that situation there. What should they say? And matter of fact, this will be someone's situation tomorrow. This very tomorrow, someone will be in that very situation. They won't know what to say.
Sometimes you don't need to say anything, just get the work done. You know, you're there to work, you're there to get the job done. Get on with your job.
Yeah.
If people talk to you, just don't overcomplicate it, don't overthink it.
Yeah.
Because if you overthink it, that's what's going to manifest.
Yeah.
Just, you've moved on, move on from it. It was a moment, that moment has passed.
That's a very good point. But the relationships now are in the broken stage. And I'm in broken stage, not because of your side, because we got to think that just because you feel like you've overcome the situation and you're cool with it and you've forgiven everybody and you're in love, doesn't mean everybody else is in that very state.
You're not there to be liked at work. If they don't like you, love them still. Just do your job. Get along with them.
Yeah.
If they talk to you, talk to them, say hi to them. You shouldn't be so worried about, are they going to like me now? As long as you've made a mistake, you're human.
Yeah.
Still like them, still be cool with them, but don't be so concerned whether they like you or not, because...
Yeah, that's a very good point there.
Like, it just doesn't matter whether they like you or not, as long as you're not holding that resentment within you.
How come it doesn't matter? You use that's a very interesting way to look at it. How come it doesn't matter what people think of you?
Because let me think what I'm trying to say. If it matters what people think of you, it starts to control your life. Yeah. You start to do things differently to please them, and you cannot do that. It's fine if you want to. If you want people to control your life, that's fine. It's up to you. But for me, we're all connected, but I'm not attached.
Yeah.
I'm like, whether Jesse likes me playing soccer, I'm still going to play soccer.
Yeah.
His opinion on that topic doesn't matter to me. I respect his opinion.
Yeah.
And I love him still.
Yeah.
But I'm not attached, so I'm not going to change myself for people.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't mean I hate them. That just means I'm not attached.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because your expectations aren't with them. Like, God gave you your expectations.
Yeah.
And with that expectations, you're just untouchable to deception, and you remember and you know who all these people are. And, I guess in that awkward relationship or awkward moment, letting your light shine is just keeping that joy and that truth in you, and just living it out in every situation. And and if anyone comes to you or chats with you, or you get a chance to talk to somebody, it's always a chance to plant a seed into them. And just by your being, and and if they're just complaining or still venting out about the situation or looking into the past, is just like a perfect opportunity, to tell them that you have a higher purpose than this, and you shouldn't let what matters now compared to what matters the most. And then just share, it's just an opportunity to share and spread that love and truth into them.
You brought out a very interesting point. Today you're bringing out a lot of points, man. A lot of questions coming out every time you talk. And you mentioned about venting. Because this, from my experience, usually scenarios like that, after an argument like that, in families, in workplace, and so forth, groups seems to form. People seem to take groups. And that usually is the cause of couple of people coming together and say, Joe, you see what that manager did? She did this to me as well. And then so people start separating and forming groups to talk negative about a certain person.
This feels like my weekend. So the situation in the weekend, we had a family meeting, there was a discussion. I stated that we all have free will.
Yeah.
No one controls what we do. We have control of what we do, what our thoughts are.
Yeah.
And I said a statement in the family chat, and I said, the devil, sometimes when you take responsibility and stop blaming the devil for some things, yeah. The devil doesn't have power unless you give him power.
Yeah.
So we need to stop excusing our behavior sometimes. And yeah, it formed a 3-1 in the house. And what I did in that situation, I love my family. But there was a verse I read a couple months ago that said, you must hate your mother, hate your father, hate your sister. I'm not literally hate them. I must detach from my family. My mom's a sister in Christ.
Yeah.
Because no one can have a higher value in your life than God.
Yeah.
So in that situation, you let them form their groups because they don't know. Forgive them, Father, for they don't know.
Yeah.
It's the same. Regardless of the age, like we said, regardless of someone's age, they don't know. They don't know who they are.
Yeah.
So it was hard. I had to bite my tongue and I had to go. You have to ignore it. Jesus walked away when they threw stones at him.
You're saying something.
Jesus walked away. And you have to really manage. I'm trying to think what I did. I had to really manage. Because I could have said a lot.
Yeah, and I had
every right to say anything I wanted to say in that situation. But hurt people hurt people. When someone is throwing stones at you, they're hurting. Because when you're full with love, you don't need to hurt anyone. So I feel it's about understanding where their hurt is coming from. Why are they throwing rocks at you?
Yeah.
So I need to understand that. Was that the question?
Yeah. It is. It's branching off that, because that's the reason why people form groups, is because they feel that this certain people is against what they stand for. And so they go and side in with people they feel are in a similar kind of mindset, similar kind of feelings. And most of the time, it's people form groups out of dysfunction. Even relationships are formed out of dysfunction.
Yeah, that reminds me of something that I've heard. Like when you suggest something to another person, you're also suggesting it to yourself. And when it's like, you know, you got to love others the way you love yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, whatever you're suggesting to another person, you're also suggesting to yourself.
So what would you say to those who, when a circumstance comes in place, when an issue comes in place, branch off and form groups? What would you say to those people that's the first thing they go to? They look for a friend that they can vent to about another person and speak negatively.
I don't think it's bad to debrief.
Yeah.
See, whenever I have to debrief, I have to make sure it's someone who understands the Word of God.
Yeah.
Because if I go to my friends who I had last year, they'll tell me all sorts of things.
Yeah.
They'll tell me things that I know that I shouldn't do. So someone like Bernadette, you know, like when she comes to me and talks to me, I don't give her what she wants to hear.
Yeah.
And she never gives me what I want to hear. She always gives me what the Bible says. We always go back to love.
Yeah.
So, like, when you vent, I feel like it's important to talk about how you feel as well, because you can't bottle stuff up.
Yeah.
You can't, because you end up exploding. So it's okay to talk about how you felt in that situation, but then we have to talk about how we can move on now. That's the biggest part, because what ends up happening in venting, that people vent about the situation but no solution. So then where are we going?
Yeah.
But when, like, my family formed a group, like they literally brought up my suicide attempts and everything I did last year, And I had to, I don't know what kicked in my mind, but I just sat there. Because my past is forgiven and forgotten.
Yeah.
They're not my God.
Good point about venting.
Yeah, you know, these people, from my observations, they like form groups to be validated, and they want to be validated to live in their lie and their feelings, and yeah, but I think it's very important not to validate them, but to remind them and tell them that they're more than this, and they don't have to feel hurt, they don't have to feel this way, because they have such a higher, like, they have such a more valuable thing that's living inside of them. And yeah, just to tell them that.
That's a good point. And matter of fact, I cannot count the number of people I lost as friends because of that very thing. Because why? And what I mean as lost a friend is the distance grew larger. Why? Because they were coming into me expecting me to tolerate the nonsense. But when they arrived, I pointed out where they were going wrong. And a lot of people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear the fact that they have a part to play in what's going on. And it's easier to always say, I was just there, somebody else did ABC. And sometimes in situations, even in breakups, in relationships, it's always also the case. And people think that it differs because when it comes to relationship now, it differs. Whoever did the most wrong did wrong. But it's not the case. Matter of fact, the most important thing to remember is nothing happens in your life without the consent of your mind. And that already puts responsibility onto us, because nothing takes place in your life without the consent of your mind.
Yeah, that reminds me of something that happened back in Alice when I was out at Fink. I rolled my mate's car a couple of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the moment, in that time, I was just... I just blamed this one car that was in front of me. It was another mate of mine, actually. But he parked up on top of a hill, and I was coming up on the hill, slammed the brakes, didn't see the car.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was on dirt road, rolled the car like 6 times. Thankfully, no one was hurt. I didn't come out with a scratch.
Yeah.
But, thank God. But everyone around me too was just blaming that one person. And I was blaming that one person. I was convinced that, it's that one person. And it wasn't until I was in a... this talk show where this cop came into the school, and he said that the court, he was talking about causes of crashes and stuff like that, and what happens in the court, and he said it's not just one person's fault, like everyone is at fault. They find something wrong, or this person could have been there, even just a bystander, it's their fault for like just being there. Like, where am I going with this? So like once I heard that from the officer, I was like, oh wow, okay, maybe there was something I could have done a lot different. Oh yeah, maybe I could have slowed down when I came up to the hill.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe I'm driving on dirt road, I could just, you know, adapt to the conditions of the road. And I was just running through scenarios then, after that, after he told me that everyone's at fault, that it wasn't just
that one person, but I took responsibility for what happened.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
I like what you said, and it's the same because sometimes you don't see it for yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and that's why I was talking to Bernadette about this situation, and she actually made me accountable and went, I could have done this in a certain way. For example, like I could have humbled myself in that situation with my family, and I could have gone, they don't have the same knowledge as I do, regardless of their age. So I could have humbled myself. I'm not saying they're below, but I'm saying I could have got onto the same level as them instead of turning around and saying, like, that we have free will, because I said that to them. I said that the devil doesn't have power unless you know what I mean? I said to them, you're making an excuse by saying the devil's, you know, controlling you. Instead of saying that, I could have said something else, and that's what Bernadette said to me today, and it made me realize that they don't have that knowledge. You know, I can't blame them for not having that knowledge either. So on my part, I could have done much better in that situation. Because I couldn't see it. Because I was within, I didn't see myself outside. I saw myself within the situation. So I couldn't see it how she saw it. So I think sometimes it's about stepping back from the whole situation. Like, be a judge. Be a judge for your own situation, I think. Because if you look at the judge in the court, the judge doesn't have any bias. He's not involved with any of the parties. He's just judging justly, or should be justly, but is that a word? Justly, my own English. But he's judging according to the law, yeah. Nothing else. And that's what I need to do sometimes, and be a judge for myself in my situation, but from outside.
I just remembered you said that. Oh, this goes back a bit to the scenarios and stuff when you said, "Oh, someone's blaming us, or a situation happens, and
yeah. It's
all on us." But and that we have the right to react. But I guess for me, you know, because my expectations with God, I don't believe I have the right to react in that way. You know, because He's given me the guidelines of how to respond.
Yeah,
and you know, He's my God, so responding in His ways is what's right for me.
Yeah.
And reacting is what's wrong. Yeah. So, yeah. Just, yeah, she was mentioning, the law.
True. As we come to an end, one thing we do need to understand is, even in this life, if God could really show you the number of people that were used as a sacrifice for you to get where you needed to get, you wouldn't believe it. And sometimes a lot of people we may blame were a stepping tool just for you to wake up. They were placed in your path for you to grow, for you to get to a higher state, for you to get a higher level of growth. And though we might turn around and blame them, matter of fact, that's the worst thing we could do, because that very person is not conscious of the role they're playing in your life. But they are playing one of the most important roles in our lives to get us to where we need to get to. This could be a family member, and this could be even the person that hates you the most. He is playing a very important role to shaping you for the place you need to go to, for the things you need to get. Now we got to stop looking at it as victim, because victim mentality is what holds a lot of us back. We want to be victims. There is no truth in being a victim. There is no power in being a victim. Victim mentality puts you in a position where people will always be at the end of the tunnel to decide what happens with your life. And so how long shall we blame those who are placed in our path to help us become great? And how great of a sin it is to hate the one who God called to shape in you. How great of a sin it is to dislike those who are placed in your path to stir you up so that you may become great. I look back and I see all the people that stirred me up, the people that were hard on me, the people that didn't want to give me a break. And one time I asked one, I said, give me a break, man, come on. But now looking back and looking at the things I do now, I reconnected with that person and I took them on to dinner to say thank you. And they said, what? I thought you hated me. I said, well, I did. I hated you because you love me. And they didn't understand what that meant. But I understood now, looking back. These were the people that were used as sacrifices for my growth. For me to get to where I needed to get now, I had to go through the people I went through. So how dare am I to condemn them, to blame them for the works they're doing without even knowing that they're doing that works? Let us reflect. That's it for today. Thank you. Yeah.
With the jail situation, so if a guy goes to jail for 30 years and he had no involvement in the case, and he gets 25 years throughout his jail time that he didn't, you know, do, I guess, and then on the 25th year he gets released for them finding out that he didn't. Do it. So, do you think this guy, does he obviously deserve to go to jail for those 25 years that is gone?
There was a case in America, the Joggers case, where four African Americans were wrongfully accused. These kids were between 13 and 17 at the time. They spent between 15 and 25 years in jail for a crime they never committed. I remember there was a petition to have them killed by a death penalty for a crime that they later found that they had never. And one of the guy who was in prison, I watched their testimony, and in fact he opened up his own law firm to help others who are wrongfully accused. So even though what he went through was the most horrible thing, the outcome, him now helping other people get justice, I don't regret anything I've done or I've been through. I don't at all. Maybe sometimes I regret hurting the people I hurt, but I don't regret anything at all, nothing. Because I understand, it's helped me understand other people in those situations as well. Because if I hadn't have gone through it, I wouldn't be able to have empathy for others and sympathy for others in those situations. Because before I went through that stuff, I used to disregard people. I used to think people were just sorry for themselves and no one wanted to do anything. But until I was in that situation, that's when I realized that there's a lot more to people's behaviors and why things happen. But nothing is a coincidence. Like, I know people think like some things are accidental, but I don't believe anything is a coincidence. Everything happens for a reason. And the situation, this thing with my family, as much as I hate being in that moment, I need to learn. I want to know why. What is this teaching me? And it's like, my thing is that I'm so quick to just learn, but I really want to understand why and what am I trying to get out of it. Like,
the thing I can say is this, is that for every seed ever planted, matter of fact, for every wrong you ever think someone did to you, for every time you failed at something, for every time you got brought down, there is a equal and much greater opposite equivalent seed of that very thing. What do I mean? I mean, let's say you were rejected for a certain job. Now there is a seed on the other side of an acceptance for a much greater job. Now the reason why we failed is that after your rejection, you are placed in a position of decision to see whether you are worthy to possess the greater job. See, an example I give to people is, for example, my research. I applied to publish this one research, and this was about 8 months ago, and I put my application down and I got rejected miserably everywhere. Now I got rejected because I didn't meet a lot of the criteria. I didn't meet a lot of requirements, but I did not bow to that experience and make that experience as part of my conduct, as part of my actions, as part of my belief systems. I knew that if failure is level 7, level 8 is a greater seed of success. Now, a lot of people, when they get to this level 7 and they see failure, they drop down and give up. Some people get a tent and they camp in their thoughts. Last time I applied for this job, I failed. Last time I got caught in jail, this happened to me. Last time I got accused, this. Last time the police saw me, they did this. Last time this person said this, this happened to me. And so we're turning experience, a past experience, to become a future experience, because you're reliving the past. And so it becomes so dangerous to the point where someone's life is just a compilation of reliving past experience. So what he lived in 2017, he relives that in 2018, 2019, and so forth. And so year after year, they are reliving what they've already experienced. And we don't want that. 8 months pass by, and the same person, who was I, that got rejected under the same requirement that I got rejected for, published a much greater research at a much greater place. What was the difference? The difference was decision making. I had to believe that what I'd experienced was not the true purpose, was not my true state, was not my true, it wasn't the place I was going to camp in. I had to believe that this was a level 7 to me. It was a level where my failures was to become the stepping stone for my success. So for every failure, there is an opposite seed on the other side of it. And what divides is like a line between failure here, success on the other side. Now what divides between failure and success is decision making. That's why Joshua said, decide this day. What would you do? Decide. And a lot of us don't want to decide. Decide for your life this day. Decide for your family this day. Decide. You can bring out your tent and you can camp where you failed. You can camp where they put you in jail. You can camp in the reason why you don't deserve to be in a certain place. But I tell you that if you decide and you make that decision, and that's a decision everybody makes, to the point where no one can blame another person for where they are, because everybody's been placed with that decision. I was blamed for 25 years. I went to jail for 25 years. I came out of it after the 24th year and they discovered it wasn't me. Well, matter of fact, if you believed that you could have got out of jail before the 25th year, you would have got out of jail. See, people place themselves in time, but you don't need to be under any time. You have the power to manifest whatever you put your mind to. You really do. And God has never been after your ability. And nobody ever asked me for your ability. See, people think because life is all about giving out resumes to get jobs, you think God is also about giving resumes. He doesn't want your resume. Keep your experiences, your past experiences to yourself. Matter of fact, He hates those who hang on to past experience, because matter of fact, not only your last failure could be your biggest opposition to get success, but also your last success is your greatest opposition to get more success. Because people want to camp. They want to camp, they want to put a tent down, they want to camp the last place they succeeded. Well, someone came out to me, I received this miracle in 2007. I was like, what? So you've put out a tent and camped since 2007. You haven't moved since 2007. You should be receiving miracles on a daily basis. Well, if you're camping for the miracle you received in 2007, the problem is not the world. It is not the people. It is you. You decided to camp in the miracles of 2007. You didn't see yourself worthy enough to get more. And I always tell people, be content where you are, but never settle. Because settling is a sign of no growth. That's it for today.
If you enjoy our content, thank you. If you want more, you can follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TikTok. Head out to our website to find out about what we're doing up next at realitychristiantv.com. If you love the work that you do and you want to support us, you can support us through Patreon, Subscribestar, Crypto. All links in the description. I'm Joel Benisha from Reality Creation. Peace out.